martyrs of Arabanim, both in 70 AD and 130 AD in different waves. Then we're taking a 1,000-year leap. There are three kinos. The first one in the order of our kinos book is called Hacharishu Mimenu Ve'adaber, which is very generic. It doesn't relate to a specific event. It's more summary of all events. It could be overlaid to all the pogroms during that period. The next one, chronologically, at least textually, in the kinos, our Sefer Kinos, is called Mi'itein Roshi Mayim, and that relates specifically to 1096, which is when the Crusades were first launched, and what occurred to the three Franco-German towns of Shom, of us Spires, Worms, and Magens. And then towards the end of the Kinos, Kina 41, and I'll discuss a little bit later why it's at the end, even though chronologically it fits a little bit earlier, is the Kina written by the Maharami Rothenburg, Shali Surufa Baish, witnessing the events in the 13th century. So I'd like to discuss each of the Kinos, highlight some of the unique messages of each Kina, then a few comments about the Kinos in general, but keep in mind there is a fourth period, which isn't really addressed by the Kinos, but was ferocious and vicious, and very relevant to what we're experiencing this year, Chas v'Shalom, not the pogroms, but in the 14th century, right after the Black Plague. In the aftermath of the Black Plague, there were horrific, horrific pogroms in the immediate aftermath. In 1348, about 1350 in France, 1391 Barcelona, and there were over 500 French and German, a little bit in Spain, but it's pretty much localized in France and Germany, so much so that you really have a vacuum of Rabbanim. The entire 500 communities were completely wiped off of the map, including the Rabbanim. And Rabbanim in the next era, the Ma'arivayel, write about this, how there's just this gap in the transmission, this gap in the Masara, in many ways, similar to a gap we feel in the post-Holocaust generation. We had these great heroes that held Torah together, but we can name them on our hands. Moshe Feinstein, Aaron Cutler, the Panavisha Rav, the Rav Soloveitchik, obviously. There should have been 50 or 60 people to that list and all the Talmidim. So just keep in mind that those events aren't described specifically, but they're very much in the background in the aftermath of the Black Plague. So the first kina that I want to talk about chronologically is Mi'itein Roshi Mayim. And this details the events in those three cities in the spring of 1096. Now, this is a signature event. What I mean by signature event, it isn't just pogroms, it isn't just suffering, but it signals something larger than itself. What does it signal larger than itself? It signals that we are now entering a deeper and newer stage of Galus Edom. Remember, in Kisavo, there are different waves to Galus Edom. How do they know that Galus Edom was beginning? They all had a prophecy. They all had a premonition. There was this long Galus that awaited them. How do you know when it's beginning? We feel Geula has begun. How do we know? So we have particular signs that we feel corroborate that the Geula has begun. How do you know that the long night of Galus Esav is beginning? The Asar Horigei Malchus was a signature event. The brutality, the violence, the torture, the exploitation. It showed that this was not just a Galus light as Bavel had been, but this was the start of a long odyssey. This was the start of Esav and Yaakov. This was the start of Jewish history's Galus, which was always there in potential, and now is becoming actualized. If you fast forward 1,000 years, that same feeling emerges in the spring of 1096. This is really the first time that you have organized, institutionalized, Christian-led anti-Semitism. It took Christianity a couple hundred years to crystallize. Remember, Christianity is still becoming a movement on its own. And now it's hurling its finger at the Jewish people as the killers of Jesus, and it's going to demand that debt in blood. These are really the first pogroms. And this launches in a 1,000-year tidal wave of pogroms and murder and bloodshed. So it's that it's that transitional moment that we're now transitioning into the... If you want to perhaps create an alignment, there's 2,000 years to this Galus. The first 1,000 years were launched by the Asar Horigei Malchus. The second 1,000 years were launched by what occurred in 1096. And Kisavo provides waves. If you read Kisavo, it doesn't start with a full intensity, with a full torture. It starts a little bit more moderate, and then if we don't climb out of the Galus, it starts to build an intensity. So this is ratcheting it up to that next stage, to the next level of intensity. So it's really a signature moment, anti-Semitism led by Christian theology rearing its head, and that's why it's so shocking. It's the first time you really see droves of people being Moser Nefesh al Kiddush Hashem, saying Shema Yisrael. Remember, Rabbi Akiva is the first person to say Shema Yisrael. Well, Hananya, Mishael, and Azaria are thrown into the Kivshan Eish. They don't say Shema Yisrael. They say Psukim, which we associate with Halel, Lalano Hashem Lalano, Ki Lashem Chatein Kavod. According to Chazal, when those children in Rome are on the boats to Rome or tossed into the sea, they recite other Psukim. Rabbi Akiva associates Shema Yisrael with Kiddush Hashem. And how many millions of Jews have died on Kiddush Hashem? Just again to provide the facts and details, just for people who may not have know the exact details of those of that summer. 1096, they first arrive in the first city to be attacked is Spires in the beginning of Iyar. And only 10 Jews are killed. Then they start attacking Worms, Vermeisa, 23rd of Iyar, Chaf Gimel Iyar. And there's a lot of betrayal by bishops. The Jews are paying off bishops to protect them. They paid the bishop in Worms money for protection, and Rosh Chodesh Sivan, he betrays them. 800 Jews are killed. And of course, they make their way to Magen's. They had paid for protection there. 1,000 are killed. Basically, 5,000 more or so during the summer. They're about 7,000. And to me, I'm just going to stop here for a moment. It always hits me very hard when I read these three kinos. It was terrible. It was brutal. It was crushing. We'll talk about all the layers to it. But if we recite three kinos on Tisha B'Av for 6,000 people, how many kinos should we be reciting for 6 million people? And we've done a lot of numbers. COVID, if Israel has X amount of COVID infections and America has, you know, 30 times scale, then we've become very adept at running the numbers of differentials between population sizes. So if you just run the numbers, and you run the numbers of these three communities, and no one is anyway trivializing what they experienced, but heartfelt kinos about the fall of three communities in the summer of 1096 and this stamped sphere. Remember, I talked about the alignment of those two periods of Rabbi Akiva, the Bar Kokhba rebellion, and the Asarage Malchus, and then 1,000 years later, what occurred to these three Franco-German cities, and each of these create the minhag called Sphira Saomer. Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, which may or may not have been the Bar Kokhba soldiers, and then what occurs 1,000 years later during the summer, and Sphira becomes Sphira almost becomes the frame of the 2,000-year Galus. And the minhag of Am Yisrael to experience Avelus during Sphira is a minhag that's entrenched in the Galus. I think it's important for us on Tisha B'Av in 2020 to realize that we've done a wonderful job in converting these very sad months back into happy months. They were happy months because they were sandwiched between Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah, Nisan, Sivan, with Iyar inserted in the middle. So they were very happy months. They were converted, me, Simcha Liagon, into months of tragedy through two events which launched each different stage of the Gullus. And now at the end of the Gullus, and nothing is ironic, all of a sudden these months have become months of jubilation and celebration and Yom Asmur, Yom Yishalayim. And so I think that history has a dynamic to it. And when events happen to occur, and I'll talk about this with what happened in Paris in 1242, during particular time, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, if you look at the events of Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, nothing is that dramatic. It's just the overlay, five and six events. Five events happened in Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, and it demonstrated to Chazal that this was a historically rife day. This was a day which was a magnet for historical consequence. So if you look at, can I share my screen area? Do I have that ability? Okay, so if you look, can everyone see my screen? Is that a yes? Okay. So if you look at the kina, HaChorishu Menev Adebe, I'm using the Koren kina. I'm sorry, I'm at HaChorishu, and I want to be at Mi'itein. So that's Chafei. So Mi'itein Roshi Mayim, you'll see some of the familiar phrases, particularly from, you'll see the familiar phrase, Minisharim Kalu. I don't use this girsa, so I'd have to find it here. But at some point in the kina, he uses the phrase Minisharim Kalu, Me'arayos Gaveru, which is taken right out of, or Avrahamim shared that language, because remember, Avrahamim recited on Shabbos is a section dedicated to those who died Al Kiddush Hashem during this period. At a certain point, I should have looked at this kinah before, but there's a certain point in which the Bala kinah justifies the fact that we're suffering on Tisha B'Av for events that didn't really happen on Tisha B'Av. And he writes, V'chi ein lahosif, you're not supposed to add, here, right here, it's right where my cursor is, V'chi ein lahosif moed shever v'tavira, you're not supposed to add extra days. Now, why not? Why shouldn't you add extra days? If these tragedies befell Am Yisrael, and the truth was, there were Tanios, it's not as if there weren't Tanios, but by and large, at this stage in history, it all drains into Tisha B'Av. Why shouldn't you add extra days? Because we're trying to stress the continuity of the event, that the events in 1096 aren't disconnected from the events in Yerushalayim in 70 or 130. That is one historical timeline and one historical process, and there are particularly dramatic pitched moments that we have to defend HaKadosh Baruch Hu's place in this world, and if we're forced to die, Kiddush Hashem. So the decision not to create a separate day isn't just conservative calendar management. We don't want extra days. It's a sense of creating integrity between events that may be dislocated chronologically, but are very much integrated thematically and historically. So when he writes V'chein Lahosif, it's because then when we don't want to add, not that we're not allowed to add. And again, another point later in the Kina, there's a lot of mocking that takes place by the Gentiles. And you start to see this mocking. Elohemo. You start to cry, where's your God? Tzurcha sayubo admos. The rock that you sought protection for until you die. So part of what's happening is not just the military attack, but the psychological warfare, because you're seeing Christianity bloom, Christianity surge, Judaism is sinking, and all these events just reinforce the state that we're no longer God's chosen people, that we've been discarded. So that will come to the fore, of course, in Paris 200 years later, about 200 years later, 150 years later. So being that we're a little bit short of time, let's segue to Mem Aleph, which is Marami Ruttenberg's Kina in the 13th century, when 20 carts of Shasin are burnt in the French city square in the aftermath of the monkey trial of Paris in 1240. The trial of Barcelona with the Ramban at least looked like a fair trial. The Ramban was handed freedom of speech. He could say whatever he wanted to. He paid a very steep price because he triumphed so dramatically, so they took it out on him. They vented their frustration, but he was fined, actually. But in Paris, it was really a monkey trial. There was no ability to defend Judaism. And in the aftermath of Judaism being found guilty, they burned all the shasim. Now, the reason is that the tail end of the kinos is the Maharami Ruttenberg styles his kina after Yehuda Levi's kin of Tzion. It's very similar to Yehuda Levi's Tzion Alotish Ali L'Shalom Asirayich, where Yehuda Levi is pining for Eretz Yisrael, and he's pining for the landscapes, and he's pining to travel. And remember, that was written in the 12th century. About 100 years later, that was written in Spain by Yehuda Levi. Now you've got the Maharami Ruttenberg borrowing that style. It's a very interesting style. I would call it the geographicalization of Torah. He turns Torah into a geography, where I want to be in your highways and I want to hug your earth. Just listen to the beginning. Shali Srufer Ba'esh L'Shlom Aveilayach. Does that sound familiar? Sion Halo Tishali L'Shlom Asirayach. Hamis Avim Shchon Bachzar Zuvalayach. I want to live in your Chatzeros. That's exactly what Yehuda Levi says about Eretz Yisrael. He says it's about Torah. So he's borrowing a very, very popular kina and applying it to Torah. Shoafim Bavarez. I want to. Remember, Yehuda Levi, I just want to touch, I want to love your dirt and your stones. So in our kinos, we recite this after the tzions because stylistically it draws from Yehuda Levi, tzion lo tishali. Of course, the topic isn't about Eretz Yisrael. The topic is about Torah. The topic is about the irony that Torah, which was delivered in fire, is now being burnt in fire. The irony is it's happening during Tammuz. Remember, it happens in June 1242. So it's, again, that period that evidently has been earmarked for tragedy and for persecution. It's happening in the city square. And the fact it's happening in the city square leads the Maharam Ruttenberg to say, wait a second, I've got this eerie feeling that I'm in an Iran Nidachas. When do you take everyone together into the city square and burn everything? That sounds like an Iran Nidachas, and no one's in Iran Nidachas. This is a center of Torah. By that point, France had already become one of the Torah centers. In the 11th century, certainly 10th century, there wasn't Torah in France. Rashi had to travel to Germany to study Torah. But at this point, France has hosted so many great Torah personalities. And at some point in the Kina, this is really the core of the Kina. I'll read it out of my Kina because I just don't want to take too much time. But at some point in the Kina, this is really the key line. You may want to scroll if you have a Kina in front of you. He highlights the fact that the Jews are being put on trial. And it's I guess towards the middle of the Kina. Teshev Berov Gava, all the nations are sitting there all comfortable and haughty. Lishpot b'neil b'chala mishpatim, and they're trying Judaism. Lishpot b'neil b'chala mishpatim v'tavi b'flilayach, and they're bringing us to court. So the geotag or the timestamp of why this is happening, not just where this is happening, is pretty evident. And remember, the Maharami Ruttenberg thinks that Torah will basically disappear. 20 carts of Shasin in 1242, he had about, I don't know, about 5 sets to a car, 10 sets to a car, about 200 sets of shas. This was pre-publishing, pre-printing press. So printing shas was exorbitantly expensive and very time-consuming. He basically assumed the Torah would disappear from Europe, or at least from France. He had no clue. And the truth was, in some ways, it did disappear, because in the aftermath of the burning of Torah, that's when the great period of censorship began. So a lot of the parts of shas in particular that were offensive to Christians began to be censored out. So ultimately, we had to pay a price for this aggression, and the price was the absolute truth of Torah. It was a price, of course, that ultimately paid off. So this is the second one, and again, the phraseology is Shali Srufa Ba'esh. Torah is being burnt in fire. Go up to Shemayim and plead our case in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because it's evident now, and this is, I think, one of the themes of this kina, it's evident now that their beef with us, their hostility to us, anti-Semitism, is not about race, and it's not about Jews and caricatures and stereotypes, because we represent Hashem, we are His chosen, we deliver a message, we stood at Har Sinai, Yarda Sinai Leolam, and the burning of the Torah, just like it did with Rabbi Hanina ben Tradyon 1,000 years earlier, 1,200 years earlier or so, highlights the fact that they're challenging us because of what we represent and because of our receiving the Torah. So that's the second medieval kinnah, Shali, chronologically, Shali Srufa Ba'esh, written by the Maharami Ruttenberg. The generic kinnah, which we happen to recite first, right after Arzei HaLevana Nadirei Torah, is called HaCharishu Mimenu V'Adabera. I'll just read it from my kinnah because I see there are time, maybe 2 minutes left. HaCharishu Mimenu V'Adabera, which has a lot of Eov in it. The first section has a lot of quotes lifted from Eov, in particular Perek Yud Gimel. Why is this kinnah beginning with Eov? Eov's at a point in Yud Gimel where his friends have tried to placate, his friends have tried to explain his plight to him, and at a certain point he says, stop, HaCharishu Mimenu, leave me alone. Stop trying to sweep this under the rug. This is real. I'm suffering. And I want to vent, and I want to say what's on my mind, no matter what. HaCharishu Mimenu V'Adaber V'Yavar Lav Ma. So Eov is pretty close to heresy because of that. We're quoting Eov because part of Tisha B'Av, I would try to distill kinos of Tisha B'Av into a four-step process, like the four steps of grief. First, we suffer the tragedy. We witness scenes that are baffling, that are overwhelming. Second stage, we ask questions. Why is this happening? Echa, we challenge Hashem. So many of the early kinos are challenging Hashem. What happened to all the promises? What happened to all these chuyos? Third stage, we realize we bear responsibility. That's called Tzidek Hadin. That we arrive at in Kina Yutes, and we quote Daniel, who was the first person to be Matztik Alav Esadin after 70 years of Galus Bava, L'cha Hashem Matztaka, V'lano Boshes upon him. And then once we accept responsibility, then we've opened the door for tshuva. L'chon Amri V'chacha Yomar Hashem, as Yishayah says, Nachnu Nachkara, Hashiveinu Hashem Elecha V'nashuva. So asking on Tisha B'Av is our right and our responsibility, even if we're brought to the point of pseudo-heresy. Because if you don't challenge Hashem, then you don't care enough about Am Yisrael. You just take it. You just absorb it. If you really suffer Tisha B'Av, you want to look at HaKadosh Baruch Hu and almost be a heretic. Chas v'shalom, not to cross that line. But that doesn't show disrespect for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That just shows the depth of how much you feel Am Yisrael's suffering. And that's why Eov is quoted. In this kinna, you see two things. I'll just summarize quickly, and the next one I'm going to tell one story. Number one, you see parents martyring their children, not just dying al Kiddush Hashem, but this is part of the long legacy of people choosing to die or to kill their children to prevent worser fates. The three boats of children who jumped into the sea to prevent sodomization, the heroes of Masada who committed suicide to prevent being tortured, and in this case, parents killing their children in order to prevent forced baptism. You have a lot of conversation, sad conversation in the halachic response of the period. How do we treat people that kill their children? Are they murderers? Are they kashrut le'edos? A lot of halachic questions. Obviously, history will try to side on behalf of parents. So this is really difficult line. Lo zachinu legadelchem l'tara. We didn't have the right to raise you for Torah. We didn't have that ability. Nakrivchem ka'ola. We'll just offer you that Kadosh Baruch Hu and ola. It's just very visceral. Put yourself into that scene. And then also there's the personalization of Torah, where Torah has to go to Shemayim and plead the case of the Jewish people, similar to the Maharami Ruttenberg, but it's a lot more heartfelt in this kina, in which he just explodes who's going to answer your questions, who's going to deal with your kastiros, who's going to sail your high seas, who's going to work out your algorithms, which is a sense that after all these pogroms, what do we have left? I just want to end with one story, that there's a masara, a very harsh masara, but it is a masara that's quoted by Svarim, that the Jews of Germany suffered disproportionately throughout history. Why do they suffer disproportionate? 1096, of course, 14th century, Holocaust. Because when Ezra returned from from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, he invited all the Jews back. Only 42,000 returned, most stayed behind. However, the Jews of Germany, evidently there were Jews that made their way to Germany after the Churban Beis HaMikdash Rishon, which is amazing. We think they all ended up in Iraq, Iran, Syria, maybe Yemen. But Jews made their way to Germany. Ezra invites them back. And the Jews write a letter. They say, Ezra, you go back to Yerushalayim. We'll stay here in Germany. They've been very hospitable to us. We'll stay in Yerushalayim Maktana. It's one thing not to return to Israel. It's another thing to use the word Yerushalayim about any city other than Yerushalayim. So it's good for me to give a yasher koach to a staff that tries so hard to highlight that discrimination and that distinction between Yerushalayim and other places where Jews live, but certainly not Yerushalayim HaGedola nor Yerushalayim HaKtana.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Terry.